And you are listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for listening. A Juneau resident died after a fire broke out in a home in the Medicine Hat Valley over the weekend. According to Capital City Fire and Rescue, crews responded to the fire at a home on Aspen Avenue shortly after 4 a.m. on Saturday. They located one person inside the home who died at the scene. Another person was found outside the home with severe burns to their upper body. They were later medevaced out of town for a burn treatment. A third person sustained a minor injury, and a dog also died in the fire. It took several hours for crews to get the fire under control. The home is considered a complete loss. CCFR and police are still investigating the cause of the fire. Mere months after announcing the purchase of an icebreaker, the U.S. Coast Guard has taken delivery of the ship. KNOM's Ben Townsend has the story.
A 15-year-old vessel, formerly known as the IVIC, was handed over to the U.S. Coast Guard in late December. The service paid $125 million for the ship, including delivery, modifications, and spare parts. Oh, and a fresh new Coast Guard Red paint job, too. It'll join the Coast Guard's fleet of two operational icebreakers that traditionally split time between the northern and southern hemispheres. The ship will be homeported in Juneau and join the Healy and Arctic patrols. Once commissioned, the 360-foot vessel, that's 60 feet shorter than the Healy, will be renamed the Storis. It'll be the second Coast Guard ship to bear that name. The original was known as the Galloping Ghost of the Alaskan Coast and was the first U.S. vessel to circumnavigate the North American continent. The Storis is expected to enter operations in 2026 following a series of modifications and testing. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
Alaskans Christina Love and Josie Hyano served on the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking and helped shape the council's 2024 report. It outlines the forms of human trafficking, suggests policies to address the underlying causes, and points out holes in the justice system that allow this type of violence to continue. Love and Hyano sat down with KTOO to talk about what it means to be a survivor and to take the stories of other survivors and those who didn't survive to the desks of federal lawmakers.
My name is Josie Hyano. I am a presidential appointee to the United States Advisory Council on Human Trafficking, which is a advisory council tasked with creating recommendations to the president's interagency task force to combat trafficking.
Hi, my name is Christina Love, and I'm 2024's presidential appointee to the Council on Trafficking. We recognize that Josie and I are in seats of privilege, you know, that there's a lot of other people that could be here who aren't. What it means to be a survivor is the recognition that that we survive something that a lot of people don't.
My position on the council, the reason I accepted it wasn't because necessarily of my own lived experience, but because I was carrying so many stories and still am carrying so many stories. So that's what the council position meant to me, was taking those stories from not only the clients and the people that I've served in my community, but my colleagues at different agencies, at law enforcement, NGOs, and being able to take that experience and those stories and level it up to the federal government level and say, these are our experiences in Alaska.
The people that I've worked with who have experienced trafficking, or even my own experience, that I never was the perfect victim and have never been the perfect survivor. You know, so we have people who are experiencing great harm who are also committing crimes. And the majority of them do end up incarcerated. The recognition that that so many of them end up in jail, but the people who harm them never do. When we talk about what Alaska needs to be able to do this in a way that would translate to lives being saved, when we're genuinely asking people what it is that they want, and we have other reports that show exactly that, where we're saying, what is it that you need? People are saying that they want to be treated as a whole human being, that they want to have access to safe housing, that they want their own money to buy food, that they want help getting their children back, or clothes, you know, that fit, or they want a washing machine, or they want their car to be fixed. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to make services as easy to access as alcohol and heroin. Whenever I'm working with someone who's experienced a lot of harm, who's trying to leave a domestic violence situation or trafficking situation, substances are not my first priority. And in taking those their coping mechanisms away, that can drive them right back. So we deeply need to understand substances as a way of coping with pain, as well as a tactic of violence. People who traffic people prey on people not having their basic needs. For a lot of people, it's because they did not have transportation that they got a ride. It is because they did not have a place to stay that they were given what they thought was a safe place to stay. Or maybe they knew it wasn't safe, but they didn't have another option. They had no other option. Or from my own experience, that they met a need that I had, and it was so basic, that's something that we should all be entitled to. If we are really working toward a solution, then we would be communities and places that when a trafficker comes in, they would have no ability to be successful, that they that our children would be so protected, that our children would know what healthy and safe feels like. So the moment they come into contact with someone who means to do them harm, they could feel it in their bodies, and all the red flags would go off, and they would have people that they could go to that would trust and that would listen to them, and we would have a response that would also include the meaningful rehabilitation of this person who is doing harm because they are also not well.
And I want to tack on to Christina's message too. Like anybody that hears this or listens to this, doesn't matter what you've experienced, what you've done, that shame can feel so crippling. And it doesn't stay that way forever. If you keep going, it doesn't stay that way. You find your people, you find the purpose for it. It could be really transformative. My experience was like being in a house that was on fire when no one had ever told me what fire was. And I didn't have a plan. I didn't know how to put it out. I didn't know if there was someone you could call. I didn't know if it was hot. I didn't know what to do. And I think that that shame combined with the naivety, like the how did I not know this? How can I even begin to comprehend or understand it? It's such an isolating, lonely place to be. And so I think some of the work that's impactful in the council and being in community with people like Christina is having the opportunity to, if anybody that listens or hears this or reads this is in a space where they feel like it's not overcomable or believable or understandable, that it is. I don't know that you get past it, but life gets bigger.
That was advocates Christina Love and Josie Hiano talking about their role on the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking. If you suspect you or someone you know is being trafficked, you can reach the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888. And in mid-August, coastal communities on the Kuskokwim Delta were hit by a string of storms that brought widespread flooding to the western part of the state. And as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, last week, the tribe representing one of those communities became the second ever in Alaska to receive a federal disaster declaration to recoup their losses.
In August, flooding brought on by heavy rains, high winds, and tidal forces caught western Alaska coastal communities off guard and drew comparisons to the impacts of Typhoon Murbach a little less than 2 years earlier. In Kipnuk, a lower Kuskokwim Delta community of roughly 600 people a short distance inland from the Bering Sea coast, the flooding was especially severe.
This August storm, compared to the Typhoon Murbach, was more impactful and it done a lot of damages.
That's Raina Paul, environmental director for the native village of Kipnuk.
I thought it was way too early. We're starting to see these extreme storm events happen more often and way early.
She says floodwaters inundated multiple homes in the lower part of the community, floated away boardwalks, and toppled bins used to collect raw sewage. Paul says she scrambled to compile photos of damage to infrastructure from the August storms. With assistance from the nonprofit Alaska Institute for Justice, she got the ball rolling on applying to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, for a disaster declaration. On January 2nd, Kipnuk's tribe became the second ever in Alaska to receive a federal disaster declaration, according to FEMA. The first went to Wrangell's tribal government following the deadly landslide there in 2023. In Wrangell, the state of Alaska also declared a disaster. But in Kipnuk, which does not have any city government, Paul says the tribe ultimately decided it was in their best interest to deal directly with the federal side, bypassing the state. Working with tribal governments is something that FEMA Region 10 spokesperson Natalie Shaver says the agency wants to better facilitate going forward.
We've worked really hard in Region 10 to make sure we are hearing and listening to tribes and being more understanding of how our programs may or may not work and the ways what we can do to better them and make them more accessible, understanding it's government to government.
In December, FEMA made changes to the ways it interacts with tribes, including reducing the minimum amount of damage that has to happen for a tribe to be eligible for assistance from $250,000 to $100,000. So far, the Native Village of Kipnuk has only been approved for public assistance, which reimburses the tribe for community-wide repair work on public infrastructure like roads and public buildings.
FEMA will reimburse the Village of Kipnuk for any publicly owned infrastructure or any work that was done to respond to the disaster.
The federal government covers up to 98% of the costs of public infrastructure repair.
FEMA staff will be setting up meetings with village staff in the next couple of weeks to start documenting damages to any kind of public infrastructure to see what will be reimbursed.
Applications for individual assistance are still pending, which would provide additional relief for individuals and households. Paul says her tribe was also recently selected by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a $20 million grant for stabilization of the banks of the Gugaklik River where Kipnuk is located. She says her greatest concern is ensuring that elders in the community who may not be able to evacuate when flooding comes are protected against an uncertain future.
We're like the forefront of all these extreme storm events happening now. I fear things are going to just get worse from here on out for the extreme storms, you know.
According to Shaver, with FEMA, a federal disaster declaration application is also pending for the native village of Guigilinoc, which is located roughly 30 miles east of Kipnuk and also reported significant damage during the August floods. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
And this is KTOO. And as for the weather here in Juneau, more rain looks like it's on the way this week. We might get between an inch or 2 inches of rain overnight tonight. This is KTOO.